Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Heather Digby Parton will be here to, well, talk about a lot of things, I guess. We've got to discuss the special prosecutor that has now been assigned to the Biden document scandal, if you want to call it a scandal. We'll also be talking about Ron DeSantis' chances of winning the Republican nomination in 2024. He is the front runner right now, but that could change very quickly. We'll also be discussing George Santos and his ongoing campaign finance scandals, of which the number just seems to keep increasing. We'll also be discussing Marjorie Taylor Greene's new personality and whether or not the media is going to let her get away with this rebranding of herself as a moderate. We also have updates on multiple different Trump investigations, including the recently concluded Fulton County investigation. All of that is coming up. And don't forget, if you want the full show every single week, become a member at ROFpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire 7 days of the week, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Ron DeSantis is already the Republican frontrunner, according to the polls for 2024, at least some of the polls, but he's got a long way to go, but he is checking off all of the right boxes right now for the Republican Party. And joining me to talk about this, as well as so many other things, is Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com. Heather, happy New Year. Welcome back to Ring of Fire. Always great to have you here. So Ron DeSantis, he's the guy right now, it seems, but is he? I mean, you know, we're very early in this. We're starting to see other Republicans come out this week and attacking him. But I think when you look at what he's done so far, he's making sure to check all those little boxes off that, hey, look, I've done everything that a Republican can do. So he's building a strong resume, but it may not be as strong as he needs it to be.
Well, it's going to be strong with the Republicans. Certainly the far right Republicans, it'll be strong. And by the way, Happy New Year. He is ticking off every box. I mean, boxes that didn't even exist until he decided to take them on. I mean, he is going out of his way above and beyond to establish himself as the greatest culture warrior in the land and out trumping Trump and every other. I mean, I don't know who, I don't think Marjorie Taylor Greene could come up with as many right-wing, you know, issues, you know, culture war issues than him. The only thing I've seen him not take on are the M&M candy controversy, and that's happening soon. I'm sure he'll go after the candy companies for being woke or something. But, you know, he went after Disney after all, so really what's the difference? You know, the guy is doing it all, and he's getting himself, he's obviously positioning himself as someone who is unassailably MAGA style far right extremist, presumably with the idea, if he runs for president, of then tacking back to the center and being a good fiscal conservative, you know, a Mitt Romney type, with all this other stuff in the background. I mean, that seems to me like is the strategy. On the other hand, it's also possible, and you know him better than I do because you live there, this guy is kind of a true believer in a lot of this stuff. I mean, everybody seems to say that he's always been an absolute jerk his entire life. I mean, they did a big profile of him in the New Yorker not long ago, and he had his college roommates and everybody that knew him just saying, this guy is a real jerk. I mean, he's always loved humiliating people. He's always loved being cruel. He's very smart, but he's very, very nasty. And that's his nature. So, you know, if that's the case, and I think that's borne out by the fact he has no real close friends except his wife. He's very, very unapproachable. There's no happy warrior thing about Ron DeSantis. He's a vicious warrior is what he is. So I think that's kind of interesting because if he's a true believer in this stuff, if this is, I mean, he was, you know, a member of the Freedom Caucus when he was in the Congress. He was a Donald Trump acolyte, I mean, not just an acolyte, a total sycophant, in when Trump came in and then Trump, you know, backed him for the governorship. I think this might be who he is, in which case he may really believe, like a lot of true believers, that this is really a very popular agenda, that this culture war stuff is a real thing, that majorities of Americans are backing him on. And I think that may be a bad bet, because I don't see evidence that that's true. And I think, you know, maybe he's calculating, maybe he's a true believer, or maybe it's some mixture of the two. But I think that it's still up for grabs whether or not this guy is the brilliant politician so many in the mainstream media seem to think he is. Because I think it's entirely possible that this guy is going to suffer from tremendous overreach and be knocked out in the process, as many other great white bread hopes of the Republican Party have been in the past. Scott Walker is one good example.
That's exactly what I was just thinking, because it seems so weird, but I've read about like three or four different, you know, big, huge think pieces on Ron DeSantis this week. And one of them did point out the whole Scott Walker factor. You know, mm-hmm. Scott Walker up in Wisconsin, clearly with full Koch brother backing that elevated him. And Walker was doing not the same things DeSantis is doing, obviously, with the culture war. So what Walker was doing instead was more of the traditional conservative, the union busting, the tax mm-hmm. cuts, the environmental degradation, and it elevated him nationwide. Everybody, you didn't have to be from Wisconsin, knew who Scott Walker was. Most people right now couldn't tell you who the governor of Wisconsin is.
Right.
But it's the same thing with DeSantis. You get this national recognition because you're doing all of the things we want you to do. Mm-hmm. But then Scott Walker flamed out. I mean, God, quicker than anybody. He was getting his butt kicked by Ben Carson and Betsy DeVos. Or not Betsy right. DeVos, Carly Fiorina was the front runner when Scott Walker never was. And it's because once you get to that point, which I guess is going to be this summer when we start having the debates, if we have debates at all, you know, who knows what they'll do. But that's when their true colors really come out. And what we've seen from DeSantis is he's a really bad debater. Charlie Crist, in the one debate he did agree to in this race here, Charlie Crist wiped the floor with him. It was astounding. But obviously down here in Florida, it didn't help. But when you've got eight people on stage and you've got that big target on your back because you're the one the media has been talking about for the last 12 months, they're coming at you, and they're already starting to do it too. So that could work against him. But on the debate stage itself, like literally on the debate stage, that's where I could see him, as somebody who's watched him for, you know, 5 years now, that's where I could see him falling apart, if he's going to fall apart on his own accord. That's where I think it could be.
Well, I think I watched the debate later after it was over, and I watched it and I couldn't believe how bad he was. I mean, I was really surprised. I thought, this guy's a professional politician. I would have thought that he could handle himself, but he really couldn't. And he did come off nasty. I mean, he came off kind of like nasty and awkward. I mean, that's a bad combination. I mean, that's one of the things I think you and I've talked about this before. You know, Trump, who is an absolute jackass, and we know that on every level, and he's mean and he's bullying and he's a real jerk. But he does it with some humor and style. He has this ability to sort of make people feel okay about having those rotten, nasty feelings. You know, this is, you know, a strange gift that he has, but he does have that gift of making his people feel like it's fun to be a jackass and to really go after. I don't think DeSantis has that capability. I mean, we've talked about this. I mean, and look at some of the stuff he's doing. I mean, in the piece I wrote for Salon this week about him, I mean, I think it's important to keep the spotlight on him. So I'm going to keep writing about him because, you know, who knows what's going to happen here. I mean, I think Trump is probably still the front runner in reality when you get out into the real world, but there's going to be a battle and this guy could maybe win by default or whatever. So it's important to keep an eye on him. He's really awful. I mean, he's exceptionally awful, and he's awful in a different way than Trump is, because his whole shtick is using the power of the state to accomplish extremist far-right goals. And that's different than Trump, who was kind of all over the place. I mean, he used personal bullying. He tried to use the state. He didn't understand how it worked. He didn't have the same sort of understanding. He made everything chaotic. And I get the feel, but DeSantis makes it all very systematic, which is really, really dangerous. And just this, just I think it was on Friday or sometime just early last, you know, late last week, that he named Chris Rufo, who is a far-right culture warrior guru who came up with the whole CRT business and then the grooming business and all this stuff, which DeSantis has been eating with a spoon, as well as Fox News. He's put him on the board of, you know, the public, what's it called, the New College? Right. Yeah. I think it's New College. Yeah, New College, which is a public liberal arts school, which is, you know, absolutely, you know, it's adored by the alumni who go there and by many people who have, you know, attended as a really great public school to get a liberal arts education in a small environment like that. And, you know, really valued by the people of Florida. He's going to put Chris Rufo and some other right wing nuts, one of them from Hillsdale College, a conservative Christian college that has very strong ties to the Republican Party, on the board there. And they're just blatantly saying outright, we're changing the curriculum, so it's going to be a conservative Christian style public school. And he's doing this very openly, and he's doing it very systematically, as he's done with election rights, as, you know, voting rights, as he's done with teacher, you know, free speech issues, with business free speech issues. It doesn't matter to him whether it's public or private. He's going after them. All of this stuff done, you know, as he said at his inaugural, which we should talk about because it's kind of hilarious to me, that, you know, he says Florida is where woke goes to die. I mean, that's his mantra. And he apparently thinks that's a big, big winner nationally. I'm not so sure it is, but that's what he thinks. And he's going for it, and he's going at it methodically, just putting people in place, firing people where necessary, you know, setting up this whole system in Florida where these people are in charge of institutions and where he can go after businesses, corporations, any kind of private industry with state power, which you would think would be antithetical to Republican, you know, what traditional conservatism as we understand it, but this is the new conservatism, and it's not Grandpa Reagan's conservatism, okay? That was bad enough. This is something totally different, much more reminiscent of some conservatism we've seen in the past, like in the 1930s.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, you know, just on the lines with the colleges of what DeSantis did, he passed the legislation to where, and it's, you know, been blocked by the courts for now, but where college professors had to disclose their political ideology. You know, saying you have to fill out the questionnaire and tell us, are you a liberal? Are you a conservative? I mean, that is straight up like, give me your papers type stuff down here. So it is so, so bad. And the problem with DeSantis is, too, that he's done so much of this that it's easy to, you know, forget about things. Because honestly, until you mentioned the colleges, I'd forgotten about the whole tell us your political ideology so we can make sure there's not too many liberals in colleges. Because there's just been so dang much of it over the last 2 years. You know, the first 2 years of DeSantis were relatively quiet. You know, we didn't see a whole lot from him. He was still trying to figure out who he was going to be. But once he latched on to CRT, critical race theory, that is when things catapulted for him. That is when the national media started looking at him and saying, wait, well, hold up. This guy, I know all the other Republicans are talking about it. He's doing more than that. So I always like to point it out this way. You've got all these right-wing states, you know, typically down here in the Southeast. Each one of them has done a couple of the worst things we've seen. You know, with the abortion bans, which is almost across the board with these Southern states. A lot of them have done abortion bans and voter suppression. Some of them have done abortion bans and banning critical race theory, which none of them can even define when asked about it.
Right, of course.
Florida down here, we've done it all. You know, we've got the law from DeSantis that says you can run over a protester if they're standing in the street. I think there's only one other state that's ever done that. So we got that. You can kill a protester if they're in your way in your car. God forbid you swerve out of the way. You know, no, the abortion thing, that's still up in the air. He kind of wants to do it. I think he understands the political dangers of doing it, but mm-hmm. he's still, we've got one already. He may go further. We don't know. The voter suppression off the charts. The critical race theory, the don't say gay, the stop woke act, the I'm going to strip Disney of their tax status and it's going to screw over that whole area where taxpayers are going to end up paying. I think it's like $2,000 more a year. And now already the Republicans in Congress have tried to undo taking away the Reddy Creek charter. That actually mm-hmm. came out recently. So he's making headlines for all of these things, but nobody on the right is following up when it all goes away, like when it gets undone by the courts or by his own Congress. So it's kind of funny. He's got such a great conservative track record. But then again, a lot of it's already been killed by the courts. So mm-hmm. he doesn't really have that track record. But as long as they think he does, then that perception right. becomes the reality. And it's still terrifying, no matter which way you slice it.
Right. I mean, even the things, just the things that have happened are bad enough, much yeah. less the things that haven't. I mean, you left out the stunt, the Martha's Vineyard stunt, which yep. is shockingly weird, because he had to go to Texas to find some migrants to ship someplace because he didn't have any in Florida, apparently. And then how about this vaccine grand jury now they're going to do? Where they're going to try to prove that the vaccines were actually a corrupt bargain with the Democrats that actually killed people instead of saved people. And a lot of that's being driven by his quack surgeon general, which, you know, that's shocking too. I mean, and all that's in the face of Florida having the highest per capita death rate for people over 65 of any state. That's per capita, too. It's not just that there are a lot more people over 65. It's that they more people over 65 per capita than any other state. And that is shameful. I mean, you know, it's despicable, actually. But he's doing it anyway. And with every time they do that, of course, they're pushing the idea that you shouldn't get vaccinated. So more people will die in the future because they're not going to be vaccinated. So that he just the list goes on. When I was writing his piece this week, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't fit it all in. I literally could not. I mean, I could go on for 5,000, 10,000 words here, you know, just laying out the list of stuff that he's done or that he's, and you're absolutely right. Most of it, or at least a good part of it, is for headlines. And what those headlines do, not only do they give him popularity among the most extreme hateful wingnuts, they also chill a lot of the stuff without the law ever having to take place. You end up with people in colleges and various, you know, across public education, really not knowing where the line is, just steering away from talking about things because they're afraid they're going to get, you know, enable some crazy parent or some local politician or someone to come after them. So it's chilling free speech and academic freedom all over. And I would imagine it's doing the same thing in corporate America because he passed a law that says that they're not allowed to use diversity training, any kind of diversity training that makes any person feel uncomfortable about discussions of race or history, racial history. I mean, that's aimed obviously at white people. I don't think black people are uncomfortable about discussions of race. I think that's probably something they think is probably useful to talk about. And it's the same thing with Latinos. But I'm pretty sure that it's just that, you know, white people don't want to be, they believe their white people don't want to be told that there's a racist history in the United States. And he even went so far in the debate, I believe it was, with Charlie Crist, to say that America's land was not stolen. That's not true. That didn't happen. Right? Well, that's just factually inaccurate because, of course, it was stolen. You know, this is what he's trying to do. He's a very, very dangerous person. And I have to hope. You know, I think it was with you that I was talking about this, is that, you know, people are all going, oh, he's the new Trump. This is the new version of Trumpism. I think it's something different. The battlefield that they're playing on is Trumpism with the culture war and all that stuff. But that's been going on the right for many, many decades. They've been playing culture. It's really reached a fever pitch. But he's really the heir to Richard Nixon, which is using state power for his own political ends. That is what Richard Nixon did. It's what Viktor Orban in Hungary is doing. It's a whole different approach. It's not, you know, specifically or explicitly Trump, although he's borrowed some of Trump's, you know, dogma, demagoguery about various things. But really, this comes from a different strain in the Republican Party. The Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon strain. That's where Ron DeSantis lies. And it's very, very dangerous and really awful. And I don't know if the Republican Party is even remotely capable of being able to push back on that. I don't know if they even want to, but it seems like they don't have any capability of even dealing with a clown like Trump. What do you do with a guy like Ron DeSantis?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin McCarthy passed this week on even, you know, doing anything about George Santos. So
exactly.
I think we know they're not going to touch a guy like DeSantis. And you had mentioned the inauguration, which, you know, it took place last week. It was a sight. I mean, it really was this big old spectacle. And he doesn't.
Did they show it on local news? I mean, did you see it down there?
We did.
Oh,
and it's funny to me. The funniest part too was seeing Jeb Bush, just kind of over off in the corner, like I'm still here. I'm still a guy that exists. Yeah, but you wrote a lot about the inauguration too in your piece. Oh. So tell us your thoughts on this insanity in Tallahassee.
It's hilarious. First of all, I mean, this just shows DeSantis's delusions of grandeur, and it's really something else. You know, this is right up there with Trump and the escalator. You know, in that regard, he is emulating it. But one of the things that cracked me up was a reporter that I read a couple of pieces about it, were saying that all the people there think that this is the reanimation of JFK and Jackie's Camelot. That's Ron DeSantis as JFK and his wife Casey as Jackie Kennedy. Now, she looks a little bit like Jackie Kennedy and she dresses like her. It's pretty clear to me that this is a conscious effort on her part. And from what I understand about their relationship, I think these optics are really kind of her bailiwick. I mean, I think this is where she is sort of the designer of their optics, their image in that sense. And she's very, very powerful in that relationship and in the Florida government and would be in government too. She's a hands-on first lady. So they have this thing, they have this big extravaganza where beforehand, the night before, they have dinner at some big donor's Italian restaurant with some very elite people. Then the next day, he has a prayer meeting with 100 faith leaders in the old, you know, what is it called? The old, Congress building or whatever it is. Then they go on the stairs and have a big ostentatious inaugural, you know, swearing in ceremony. He gives a speech. This is the speech, by the way, where he said Florida is where, you know, woke goes to die. And then he compared it, you know, he talked about the Gettysburg Address and the Declaration of Independence and Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and the Battle of Normandy. I mean, you know, this is some grandiloquent nonsense that's coming out of this. I mean, he's doing a state swearing in ceremony. I mean, it's not like he's running the, you know, World War II or something. It's ridiculous. But anyway, he does that and he says that, you know, the big applause line is that he will always protect innocent children from predators or something. And yay, everybody's just throwing, oh, it was so fabulous. This is DeSantis Palooza is what they called the weekend. That's literally what they called it. I mean, it's kind of lame, but that's what they said. So then that night they have the inaugural ball and they come out. This is really funny. They come out to the strains of the Van Zant song. They enter the room to the strains of the Van Zant song, Sweet Florida, which has the lyrics, I'm sure you know are aware of it. They play it every 5 minutes down there. it's all about how dark Brandon ain't going to get you and we're going to be free and we're not going to take no mandates and, you know, all this thing. This is what they come out and everybody's, oh, it's so beautiful. You know, this is just, look at them. Aren't they fabulous? This is, you know, this is his. He was there in front of 4,000 very, very, I'm sure, very generous donors and other supporters. And, you know, it's fine. Every governor gets an inauguration if they want one, you know, that's fine. But this one was particularly over the top. I thought everything I read, and I went and looked, I'm going, did other people do it? You know, that Gavin Newsom did a pretty ostentatious one here in California too. Nobody paid any attention here though, because we don't do state politics in California. So, yeah, whatever, get out of here. But you know, this is who they think they are. I mean, this is what they're planning, and apparently their followers think so too. It's Jack and Jackie. It's Camelot. You know, Camelot in the swamp, I guess. You know, I don't know. It's just unbelievable.
Well, and it's exactly what Donald Trump wanted to be. I mean, they wanted the Trump family to be the next Kennedy family. And you know, you're talking about DeSantis's inauguration, thousands of people there, everybody having a good time schmoozing and hobnobbing. And you compare that to Trump's announcement that he held at Mar-a-Lago when he said he was running again. They had to have security, like, bar the doors so people wouldn't walk out while he was talking. Like, they didn't have to do that for DeSantis, but they definitely have to do that for Trump. And so I will say, because you mentioned the grandstanding, which is all this. It's all DeSantis has ever been down here in Florida. It's just the grandstanding. But when it comes down to it, if he wants to run, not only is he going to have to venture outside of conservative media. There was a great piece in the New York Times this week talking about how he is like the only one that hasn't actually sat for an interview with real news outlets. He's only going on friendly media. Mm-hmm. So that has worked to his advantage, but it's going to hurt him in a presidential race if he continues to do that. He's got to introduce himself to the public. But furthermore, we know where he stands on the critical race theory and the transgender community and pretty much everything else, the wokeness. But what are his economic policies? Mm-hmm. What's his environment? He has no real legislative accomplishments that have benefited anyone in this state to speak of. And you look back at his record when he was in Congress, he never got a single bill passed. There was not a single bill in his, 6 years in Congress, not one thing that had his name on it that got passed. Not a single thing. So, you know, he's going to have to answer those questions. And I think it's going to be the other Republicans on a debate stage that are going to be the ones to, you know, hammer him on those issues, which is where he could fall apart if he falls apart. So I think there's a lot of things. He's living the high life right now. The question is, how far can that take him? And it may be a, well, I guess we're going to find out situation, huh? Like, we'll find out.
It looks that way to me. I mean, I've never, you know, I was always sure that Trump was going to try and run. I mean, that just always seemed obvious to me because he lives for revenge, right? So he could not let the opportunity to get back at Joe Biden and all of his, you know, enemies by not running. I mean, I just think that that's just in his DNA. So I knew he would run. DeSantis, I have never been sure of because, I mean, I think he's definitely going to run someday, but I wasn't sure if he would want to go up against Trump in 2024. It'll be an ugly, bruising battle, between the two of them and God knows how many others that may decide that Trump is weak enough that they can take him on. It's going to be a very bruising campaign and will hurt him with some people that I think he values and thinks are important to his political career. So he's young. I mean, he could wait, you know, an extra 4 years and run after Trump is long gone, maybe after Biden is reelected and everybody's tired of the Democrats and ready to let the Republicans have a chance. I mean, you know, that's usually how that stuff goes. So he could wait, and I've wondered, but boy, the way he's acting sure indicates to me that he's running. I mean, this inauguration and the Jackie and Jack thing and all of that stuff, it just screams presidential, you know, hopeful. I mean, everything about it just says, and he's been doing some various, you know, going to certain meetings, talking to certain people, attending certain events that are usually sort of the dip your toe in the water. So, you know, I'm more convinced today than I was before that he's going to run in 2024. And, you know, I don't think people really know him. I mean, the stuff that I read about him, and I follow this closely, but in these, you know, new profiles that are coming out, I mean, he's a much more unsavory character, I think, than even I knew. And he just is not, you know, like I said, there's one politician that made it all the way to the top who was a mean and unpleasant, non-people person kind of creepy guy. And that was Richard Nixon. That's the only one, though. I mean, all the rest of them have people skills. That's part of the job. It's the ability to sort of not just one-on-one, but do it through the media and appear to be someone that, now I'm not talking about, you know, someone you'd like to have a beer with, although that doesn't hurt to be someone, or in Joe Biden's case, to have an ice cream cone with or whatever. But, you know, they have this something about their personality that makes you sort of feel comfortable with them. And this guy's a very uncomfortable feeling person to anyone but the most far-right bully. Those guys are very comfortable with him. They love it. The meaner, the better. But I think that's a small, I don't even think that's a majority of the Republican Party. I'm not sure once the Republicans get to know him, but they're going to like him very much either. I mean, you know, a lot of this is just heuristics, just instinct that people feel. So yeah, we'll see.
You know, listening to you say that, I had a thought here, because we talked about the comparisons to him and Scott Walker, but when you talk about just being an unlikable bully, always just seems grumpy and mad, doesn't want to talk to people, can't relate to average human beings on the street, maybe a better comparison is Chris Christie in 2016. I mean, Chris Christie running for president in 2016, he was the grumpy guy. He was weird and awkward trying to talk to people like at the fair and all that. And it didn't work for him, obviously. And Christie did good on the debate stage. He actually did pretty well. I mean, he shut Marco Rubio the hell up in a way that I still watch that clip a couple times a year. It was so great.
I love that one. Yeah, just when I need to lift my spirit.
But Christie was also just generally mean, and he wasn't. I hate to phrase it this way, but I'm at a loss for a better way to put it. Trump was fun about being mean, and I don't mean like I enjoyed it. But
but I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, Trump looked like he was having fun when he was making fun of people. It wasn't with DeSantis. It's coming from a place of I genuinely hate you,
right?
And
I
want you. But Trump could laugh about it. He could get the audience to laugh at his insults. Mm-hmm. With DeSantis, people are like, "Oh, wow, okay, he's pissed. We need to calm down."
Yeah, exactly.
And there is a big difference in the eyes of the public between those two things. So it's such a weird dynamic because, yeah, there's lots of different comparisons. But I think with the way the Republican Party has morphed, we don't even know what they accept anymore or what they want.
We really don't. I mean, we're making, you know, some assumptions about how normal people perceive things. And I don't know that these people, you know, that Republican voters, and especially if you just look at their media and what they're exposed to, what they think is normal anymore. I mean, I just, you know, they live in a very, very limited little silo of ideas and attitudes in which, and they have convinced themselves. Of course, this has always been true of the right. I've noticed it since I was a kid. They think everyone agrees with them. They always have. Just assumed that the entire country agrees with them. It's just a few people, you know, on the fringe of the other side who are running everything and making it so that the, you know, the real people, it's that sort of silent majority concept, right? Oh, they all agree with us. They're just not saying anything. And it doesn't, the elections don't really matter in that regard anymore because they don't accept that elections are legitimate. So, you know, that's part of the problem with this. We, you know, when you try to sort of, you know, observe what the other side might think of something or how they might perceive it, and it's not very easy anymore. So you take everything I said with a grain of salt about how DeSantis is going to be perceived. They may just love him, you know, even more than they love Trump. It's entirely possible. I mean, I feel like he doesn't have that Trump X factor that seems to thrill all these other people, and I'm talking about average voters. I mean, politicians, it's a whole different ballgame. I have a feel, I'm sure that the establishment Republicans, no matter how mean and nasty and a complete jackass DeSantis is, they love him. He's their kind of guy. You know, this is a Republican, you know, demolition man. They really like that. But I'm talking about average voters. And they may not like him so much if he, you know, because he's very autocratic and, you know, they will be under his thumb. But, you know, they were under Trump's thumb. They didn't mind. So that obviously they don't care about that. But it's the average voter that I wonder whether or not they're going to warm up to DeSantis, especially if he's up against Trump. I mean, Trump, and we've talked about this, that Trump has, I think, a loyal base within the Republican Party that that is composed of about 35%, maybe 40% of the party. 35, you know, being sort of a, you know, I think a reasonable assumption. They love the guy. And I don't think they're going to go anywhere. So he has that. It's a heavy lift in the Republican primaries to, you know, overcome that. That he goes into it with that large minority, that, you know, a plurality that is devoted to him, that they're not going to go anywhere. I mean, Trump's not going to back off. It's not like Trump's going to say, well, you know, you're right. Yeah. I'm just not up to it. You know, Ron, take the wheel. You guys all vote for Ron. He's a good guy. I mean, that's the last thing he's going to do. So he'll pump that group up. You know, I mean, he will absolutely do it. And the way the Republican primaries are run, it's winner take all. So if there's more than, you know, if Pompeo and Pence and Nikki Haley and the rest of them, if they are in it in the beginning, along with DeSantis, Trump stands a very good chance of winning all the early primaries, in which case there will be no stopping him, right? I mean, they have to take him out early. And really, I mean, not that he'll quit, but they have to make it clear that he's not going to win a majority very, very early. If there's a crowded field, that won't happen. I don't think, because I think his 35% would be with him with everything. And then in a winner-take-all state, he wins. And that's that.
Exactly. And that's what people have to understand. You know, yeah, you may have a majority of Republicans who don't want him, but if you have to split that 65% among five people, then suddenly Trump's winning by double digits, because you're right, that 30, 35, 40%, whatever it is, they won't leave him even for a guy like DeSantis.
No.
They'd go to DeSantis after Trump, absolutely.
Right, in the general, yeah.
But if Trump is an option, that's where they go. And that crowded field splits it in a way that hugely benefits Trump. So I know he pretends he doesn't want everybody to jump in the race, but trust me, Trump's people have told him, look, you want another 20 people in this race like you had in 2016, because that also benefited Trump. And I mean, hell, at this point, it looks like we may have that, because like you said, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, hell, John Bolton is now teasing out a run too, as if anybody in this country wants to vote for John Bolton. Mike Pence, who has no base at all anymore.
No constituency, none. One person. I don't think he's got, maybe his wife. That's it.
Exactly. It that might even be questionable at this point.
Yeah. So it is a secret ballot. So, you know.
But yeah, it's, God, and just even mentioning those names, it just makes me realize, like, oh, my God, there's nobody. Chris Christie may also try to jump in again. And then
he's making noise about it for sure.
And then you've got your always ran Ted Cruz. He'll be there.
Youngkin from Virginia. Who's the other governor? There's another. Oh, it's Asa Hutchinson from Arkansas. He's running. There's quite a field. Now, I don't know how long they'll last, but there's a big group that is testing the water.
Yeah, Sununu, maybe even Kristi Noem. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. God. But anyway, look, I want to switch gears real quick, because we did have big developments this week in the most annoying thing. God, this is the most annoyed I think I've been through the Biden administration. Biden's document. If you want to call it a scandal, it's a scandal. I mean, just really, like, it is the one thing you're like, look, Biden, man, you could have done anything, but not that. Like, no, the worst possible thing that could happen. But obviously, now we've got a special prosecutor.
Yeah.
But it is important, and you and I both agree with this. We talked about it before we were on the air. This isn't even close to what Trump did and has done and continues to do to this day. But man, the optics of it. Oh,
yeah. It makes it very, very difficult. And I'm sure you did exactly the same thing I did when you heard it, which was, oh, you know, just groan. Oh, please. I mean, of course. And it's really important to reiterate this and to say this, because the media is having a hard time because it's so exciting and they're just, you know, loving, you know, now they can show that it's, you know, they, that both sides do it, you know, their favorite thing. But the truth is that you just have to go back. I mean, I'm sure you said the same thing I have through the entire Mar-a-Lago document saga, which is, you know, the question, why didn't he just give them back? Had he done that? No one would have even, it would have been a one day story. No one would have cared. They would have, yeah, of course he had a bunch of documents in there, you know, but if Fanny cooperated and that, you know, they come and say, hey, we believe there are some missing documents, and Trump had, all he had to do was say, okay, I'll get my people on it. We'll give them back if we have them, and then just give them back and just, you know, oops, you know, my bad. We were, you know, packing in a hurry, and I guess we just, you know, we just stuck some in the boxes, but here you go. That would have been it. The National Archives would never have turned that issue over to the Department of Justice. It just wouldn't have had that. I mean, these kind of things do happen. I mean, it's not uncommon. And they just ask for the documents, and the documents are given back, and it's no harm, no foul. When you put what Trump did, which was refuse to give them back, then they came, they sent down some, they turned it over to the Department of Justice because the archives couldn't get any cooperation. Refused to, the Department of Justice actually came down and talked to them and talked to the lawyers and tried to negotiate, you know, what do we have to do, blah, blah, blah. Still wouldn't give them back. They issued a subpoena. He still wouldn't give them back. They were finally forced to issue a warrant to go down and get the damn things, because he refused to give them back. And when you put that in the context of all the intelligence that, you know, Trump screwed the pooch on intelligence over and over again when he was president. Remember, you know, I mean, just the Russia stuff alone, he brought in the Russian, the Israeli ambassador and told him, you know, some kind of big state secrets. You remember on the terrorist thing, just within day, I think it was the same day he fired James Comey. I mean, you know, it's really that bad. You know, he tweeted out some highly, highly classified pictures of an Iranian, you know, a bombing of an Iranian site. You know, this guy was having secret meetings with Vladimir Putin that nobody knows what they were saying. I mean, there were real reasons to suspect that his refusal to give up these documents had some deeper meaning. We don't know what that might be, and everybody knows he's crazy, so it could just be that he's, you know, stubbornly refusing to admit that he ever did anything wrong, or it could have been very easily that he was doing something nefarious with those documents because he acted that way all the time. That's the context within that thing. And when it first happened, I wrote this many, many times up until recently, just going, look, the problem isn't the documents. I mean, they've got them now. You know, we're probably good. Hopefully nobody was, you know, exposed by to anybody. We haven't heard that that's happened. But the problem is that this guy is just, why did he refuse to give them back? What was he trying to hide? Completely different situation with Biden, which, of course, he shouldn't have had the documents in this office that he was working in or in his home. But there's no, but they immediately gave them back. Turn them over instantly to the archives. I mean, let's face it, they could have torn them up. Nobody would have ever known they were there. It's not like the archives were looking for them. They actually, like, as they were with the Mar-a-Lago document, they were just some documents that they happened to find. They could have torn them up and no one would have known the difference. They didn't. They did the right thing. Gave them to the National Archives. It was turned over to the DOJ for obvious reasons, because of the Mar-a-Lago thing. You couldn't say, you know, we're not going to look at this. And now for the same reasons, they assigned a special prosecutor. But there's nothing in Joe Biden's past that implies that he was, you know, giving away national intelligence secrets to anybody. And, you know, that he, I mean, that or he doesn't have any record of doing that kind of thing, or that there are foreign governments who are, you know, currying favor with him by paying him vessels of money. I mean, I know on the right there are conspiracy theories about that, but it's all BS. So, you know, it's a completely different situation. Nonetheless, we're going to have to live with it. You and I are going to be talking about this. I don't know how long this is going to go on. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you know, all special prosecutors have to be Republicans. That just is the law. I think the last Democratic special prosecutor was Archibald Cox. I'm not kidding. Yeah. I don't know who else. I mean, they've all been Republicans. Lawrence Walsh, you know, Ken Starr, you know, James Comey, when he was doing the Scooter Libby thing, you know, Mueller. I mean, they're all Republicans. So that's just the rule. So now we have a Republican, you know, I don't know about Jack Smith. We don't know what his affiliation is, but he's a prosecutor. So he's probably a Republican. And this new guy is also a Republican, appointed by Trump to the U.S. attorney, which apparently is the new thing, is that if you're going to have a special prosecutor, it has to be somebody that was, if you're going to have a prosecutor look at anything to do with the Bidens, it has to be a prosecutor that was appointed by Trump. Because yeah. That's a guy who's doing the Hunter Biden thing in Delaware and now this. So here we are, you know.
Damn. Yeah, it is.
You know, and we were on a roll, damn it, you know.
His approval rating was ticking up. We just got reports inflation was going down. We're probably avoiding a recession. Hey, Republicans in absolute chaos in D.C.
Of course.
I mean, yeah. My God, the wind was at his back. Everything was looking so good mm-hmm. for the Democrats. And again, this, in a normal world, this wouldn't hurt the Democrats at all because – right. Like, oh, we found these. Hey, National Archives. Hey, we found these. These are yours. Please yeah. take them away. If you want to come look for others, we'll go look for others. We'll make sure we're good. You could not have done it more correctly.
Right.
Other than not having them to begin with, obviously, but still. And compare that with Trump. Like you said, the National Archives had been working on this for more than half a year. I mean, yeah. And if he had just complied with it to begin with, we may not have even known it. And like you said, even if we did, it would have been a one day story. I'm sure I would have done a segment on it real quick, 3 minutes, mm-hmm. like, yeah, this idiot tried to walk away with documents. They found him. What a dumbass. And it would have been over. Like we wouldn't have even remembered it happened, but he fought it. They lied. They lied in sworn documents that we turned it all over. There is no comparison, but still. We've got the Republicans. They're pushing conspiracies. Cash Patel was out there saying, oh, it was probably documents that may have had blackmail on Merrick Garland so that Biden could use that to tell Garland not to investigate really? Hunter. Oh, he did.
Oh,
I mean, the guy made it seem like Biden was psychic and knew he would eventually be president. So he stole documents while he was vice president to blackmail Merrick Garland, who was just a federal judge at the time, to not investigate his son, who wasn't under investigation.
Totally legit.
It's so totally stupid. Legit. But that's, you're right. Like now it is something we have to address and we're going to have to fight back against the stupid because if we don't, they will capture the narrative and what Biden did will be a million times worse than what Trump did. So we're in a position, and maybe this is why I am so annoyed by it, because it's like, damn it, you've given me work now that I shouldn't have to be doing. Like, we shouldn't have to be going out there and combating the stupidness. But we'll add it to the list of what we got to do. Yep.
It's always like that, you know. And the truth is that, look, you know, the absolute reality here is that every time they bring up Biden's documents, we bring up Trump's documents. And they may come to regret pushing that too hard because what they really should want is for it all to die down. I mean, what they should want is, well, this equals Trump, so everybody, you know, we're not going to talk about it. They're not doing that. They're going to make a big deal about Biden and their people were all talking about it, and we'll talk about Trump. So, you know, I'm not sure Trump is getting what he wants out of this because it just means that it keeps it on the front burner. The document things, because in every case, as we've just laid out, it makes Trump look worse. So, you know, good luck. Enjoy, guys. You know, we'll be talking about classified documents now, but it's not just Biden, right? I mean, we're going to be talking about Trump, and that there could even be, you know, I doubt there will be prosecutions on that one. I never thought there would be on the Mar-a-Lago case. So, you know, I think if there's a prosecution, I think it's going to come out of Georgia or, you know, the DC, you know, special prosecutor's office, but we'll see.
Yeah. Fingers crossed on both of those, you know.
Yeah.
Let's hope Georgia makes a move because he can't be pardoned for that, which that's, you know, that's the great one. Like, let's get something there. And then, of course, the DOJ. But listen, Heather Digby Parton with Salon.com. It's always great talking to you. Again, we're what, almost 2 weeks into this year. Oh my God. If this is any indication.
We didn't even talk about McCarthy. So, you know, we've got all of that. Oh my God.
But look, we're in for a crazy ride and
we are.
Hopefully we get you back on, just as much as possible because you're one of the best people to sort through it. So thank you again for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And that's it for the free portion of this week's show. But don't forget, you can get the full show every single week, plus access to the entire Ring of Fire podcast archives. Just go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.